This podcast is intended for UK and Ireland healthcare professionals only. It is my pleasure to welcome you to Series 2 and Episode 2 of the ILD Academy Spotlight Podcasts, brought to you by Boehringer Ingelheim. Featuring prominent members of the UK and Ireland interstitial lung disease community, these podcasts hope to shine a spotlight on the great work being done around the country and break down some of the challenges facing us in delivering excellent care to our patients. My name is Dr. Anne-Marie Russell, a clinical academic at the University of Exeter Respiratory Institute and Royal Devon and Exeter NHS Foundation Trust, and I have a special interest in patient-reported measures and outcomes in interstitial lung disease and patient-centred approaches. Joining me on today's episode is Dr. Pilar Rivera-Ortega, a respiratory consultant with a speciality in interstitial lung diseases and the clinical and research lead of the ILD unit at the Northwest Lung Centre, Withenshaw Hospital, Manchester, University NHS Foundation Trust. Welcome, Pilar.
Thank you very much, Mary, and thank you very much for the invitation. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm looking forward to our conversation. And I wondered, Pilar, if I could start by asking you a little bit about your multiple roles in interstitial lung disease before we maybe then shift to focus a bit more on the work that you do as the lead of the familial interstitial pneumonia clinic in the Northwest region. So just a little bit about you and your background in interstitial lung disease.
Sure. So I did the ILD fellowship at Bellvitge Hospital in Barcelona, Spain. And I finished that fellowship in May 2016. And my mentor was Dr. Maria Molina Molina, who is a key opinion leader in telomere shortening syndrome and ILDs overall. In this ILD specialist center, of course, we had a familial ILD clinic, which is carried out by Dr. Planas and led by Dr. Molina and alongside other members of the team. And they perform a comprehensive consultation, family tree, information about genetic tests and studies and the sample collection. So from that time that I started the fellowship in 2015 and I finished in 2016. And then I was working as an honorary ILD specialist at Bellvitge Hospital in Barcelona. Since then, my interests relate to genetics on ILD and specifically telomere shortening syndrome started. Then in December 2017, I came to Manchester and I started as a respiratory consultant. And then alongside my colleague, Dr. Stefan Stanel, at that time he was a clinical fellow, currently he's an honorary physician and research fellow, we started the familial interstitial pneumonia clinic. And that, in terms of research aspect, that starts at the beginning of 2019. And after a business case, a standard of care and research that start at the end of 2019. And that is basically, the background related with ILD and specifically my interest associated with genetics on ILD.
Yeah. Thank you, Pilar. Fascinating. I know you work incredibly hard and you've driven a lot of changes within the service. But thinking perhaps now specifically about familial IPF and the diagnostic and prognostic pathways, could you give us some background information on the role of your work around telomere length and the importance of telomere length in the therapeutic management of patients with interstitial lung disease?
Absolutely. In terms of how the clinic is performing at the moment at Withenshaw Hospital, so we have a clinic for familial interstitial pneumonia. The consultation model is like the one carried out in Barcelona during my time in Spain. But in that case, the sample for genetic testing is blood, is not a buccal swab. That is the sample validated in Spain. Until early this month, April 2022, the samples were sent to a biobank that is part of an NIHR bioresource rare disease phase one project. and all patients after the consultation were referred to the Manchester Centre for Genomic Medicine for genetic counselling and additional sample collection if necessary. So the results and their clinical significance are discussed in a multidisciplinary way with the Manchester Centre for Genomic Medicine staff. And I think it's with them and later with the patients. So that is more or less what we are doing at the moment in the clinic. But now in terms of that clinical implication or importance, so let's start from the basics. As everybody knows, idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis is the most prevalent fibrosis in interstitial lung disease and with the worst prognosis. The term familial pulmonary fibrosis is defined when it occurs in two or more individuals from the same family. And it's in this context that the first studies and clinical trials, and more I think it's a cohort per specialty centres, start studies, that start the point to telomere alterations, even if it's telomere shortening or telomere dysfunction, that were put under the umbrella of telomere alterations, were recognized as a risk factor for pulmonary fibrosis. So in what sense that could be a risk factor? Could be a risk factor because when we have a measure that is very short, we will have a length of the telomere that is short, and that can trigger, I think it's that permanent shutdown of the cells or the senescence or apoptosis. And after that, of course, that accelerate telomere shortening, I think it is associated with premature aging. And of course, that includes many organs such as the lung. And that, of course, is a consequence. We can have an abnormal tissue repair and that resulting in pathogenic consequence. And one of these pathogenic consequences could be the pulmonary fibrosis. So even if it's an idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis with family aggregation, that in that case would put possible familial pulmonary fibrosis or a sporadic idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, but if we have a mutation on the telomere-related genes, that could be associated, of course, with the worse prognosis or more active behavior of the disease. And of course, that have clinical implications in terms of the treatment and if the patient will be referred for transplantation. So that, in short, could be more or less clinical implications to know if a patient can have a mutation that could be associated with his or her disease.
That's really interesting. Thank you, Pilar. It's just made me think and reflect on some of my own patients and possibly thinking particularly of women who maybe started out with a diagnosis of hypersensitivity pneumonitis or CTD-ILD and then evolved to subsequently have a diagnosis of IPF. Do you think that it would be helpful in those sorts of cases to be able to do telomere work?
Absolutely. I think it's what we should do is to try to customize the cases and personalize the medicine. And the example that you just mentioned is a clear one of that. So now I think it's that as part of the concept as well, for example, in progressive fibrosis in ILD, not only about IPF. So nowadays, we are in a trend to think that it's not a matter if we have a cause of the ILD. Maybe we have a cause, for example, in connective tissue diseases associated with ILD. Maybe we have a well-identified antigen for a chronic hypersensitivity pneumonitis. Or maybe we are talking about the most common and worst prognosis fibrosing condition like IPF or other type of IIP. But if these patients have certain type of characteristic or features that can raise the concern about the possible genetic component, in that case, I think it's those patients should be referred to the genomic medicine locally or regionally. So to put an example, what type of features, for example, we need to look for. And now I think it's not only about in case of family aggregation. If we have a relative with an interstitial lung disease, it's not necessarily the same type of disease that the index case have. For example, if the patient has IPF, but maybe the relative has fibrotic NSIP, it's a family aggregation and if an IHC member. So in those cases, only for that, I think is the patient should be referred. I think it's to a genomic centra for some genetic tests. But in case of not family aggregation, if a patient is under 50 years old and have an idiopathic interstitial pneumonia, IIP, in that case, the patient should be referred for a genetic testing, or in case of any clinical suspicion of telomere shortening syndrome, for example, premature hair graying under 25 years old or premature menopause under 45 years old, of course, not for surgical cause. In the case of unexplained hematological abnormalities, special interest in any type of bone marrow failure, myelodysplasia, or I think it's typical non-specific abnormalities, anemias, but not related with any specific cause, or unexplained liver function abnormalities or cryptogenic cirrhosis, or patients with non-specific autoimmune abnormalities, or in case of any specific family history for conditions that we know that are related to genes that could be affected as well, the lung, for example, family history of congenital dyskeratosis, or I think it's a aplastic anemia. In those cases, I think it's that could be really important to refer the cases to a genomic medicine. And now with, I think since this month that we can, I think it's detail later on, what is the implication about the National Genomic Test Directory that just was published this month. I think it's nowadays have even more importance, and specifically in those patients that we are thinking about to refer them for lung transplantation.
And of course, lung transplantation, very important in familial IPF because the patients tend to be presenting earlier and certainly under the cutoff age range when they would be eligible for lung transplant.
Definitely, definitely. Also, not only I think it's at the time that we refer the cases to lung transplantation, if we put a step back, even during that diagnostic pathway, if we have the clinical suspicion that the patient will have a genetic component or the patient already has a family aggregation, therefore is a high suspicion of familial pulmonary fibrosis, we should try to avoid any invasive tests, for example, lung biopsy. Why? Because these patients have an abnormality or an alteration in terms of tissue repair. And so I think it's rather than to use a test to clarify and help us in terms of that establish a high diagnosis in an MDT that cause a problem and a damage to the patients. So I think it's, we now I think it's how even we don't have at the moment any international guidelines related to when we can add specifically the genetic testing. But currently we have an ERS task force that, finger crossed, maybe I think it's in this ERS in September in Barcelona, we can have some news about that, to redesign overall the classification, the diagnostic pathway, and also to consider that it's a dynamic process. It's not only at the time of the diagnosis or when we decide to refer to lung transplantation. It's basically all the time, and to ask the questions and reassess the patients constantly during the follow-up visits as well.
And so could I ask you, Pilar, about the availability within the clinical setting of telomere testing in the UK at the moment?
Yes, of course, absolutely. So as I said before, since this month, particularly April 2022, has been key for this field because the genetic tests for familial pulmonary fibrosis have been incorporated into the National Genomic Test Directory. Specifically, we have a code that is the R421. So in this code, I think its criteria are any patient with idiopathic interstitial pneumonia under 50 years old should be referred or can be referred, if the patient wants, of course, to a genomic medicine locally, or in case of family history of ILD, and that is regardless the cause or association of the ILD, or in case of suspected telomere complex mutation or telomere shortening syndrome that we discussed just a few minutes ago, what the characteristics or clinical features are. So in those cases now, I think it's since this month, and that would take place, it was a few days ago. So now I think it's, we will work, I think it's more comprehensive, and I think it's a holistic approach, and together originally that means every part in the UK community region will have equal access, and also I think it's all these tests available in selected cases. Again, I want to remind that that doesn't mean that we should refer all ILD patients for this test. It's not, I think it's not a good measure, it's not productive, and also it's not cost effective. It's basically selected cases with those characteristics that I think is for the patient will have a strong impact in terms of the prognosis, the timely treatment, and also the study potentially to the relative, that they cannot have any disease at that time, but if they have the same mutation, potentially in the future, they can develop a disease. So in the relative, maybe we need to start as well some recommendations about minimize or reduce risk factors, for example, environmental factors, smoking consumption, among others.
And you mentioned before, Pilar, genetic counselling, which is obviously very important in familial conditions for which there is no curative treatment. Presumably genetic testing is something that would just be available at the specialist centres.
Yes, I think it's, well, currently I think we have a network that is just from this month, as I said before. So currently is we have a central, could be a district general hospital. I think it's a small hospital, but if they have a case that could be a suspected ILD, they should refer this case to the referral centre or the ILD specialist centre. And that, of course, is overall to establish a high-confidence diagnosis after an MDT and start timely treatment. And for these centres as well, they can directly refer the patient to the genomic medicine centre locally. I think we have, as far as I know, four largest. I think it's one that they have, I think, an area to cover. And then I think it's, of course, we need to specify what the characteristics are that the patients are, I think, are meeting to be referred. And then I think it's a specific test after a genetic counseling would be performed. And then I think it's the next step will be when the results are back, because after the proper interpretation of that is to try to verify if those variants are pathogenic variants, in that case mutation, and if that could be related to the ILD that the patient have, or that could be only incidental findings that we don't know what the implications could be. So that is at the moment how the network works. It's basically, I think, it's from the ILD specialist centre, ideally it should be referred to, I think, it's the genomic medicine regionally. But I think it's now to take that as an example, what could be in the future, because even in our centre, we need to change our standard flowchart based on this new directory. And the next step, I think, is we definitely need to have a meeting with the members, in my case, in the Manchester Centre for Genomic Medicine, and to process the previously collected samples that we have on the biobank and restructure our flowchart, as I said. And maybe it's the time to start the joint consultations with the genetic counselor, the genetic consultant, and the ILD consultant. And I think that could be extremely helpful. And also, I think it's overall a new and interesting era is about to begin in the UK. And for this type of rare diseases, we need to be aware and ready for that.
I couldn't agree more. And I think we are in very exciting times in many, many regards. But just thinking, obviously, you have a a special interest in familial IPF. I suspect historically cases have been missed in decades gone by due to lack of awareness and understanding. I think that knowledge level is improving. And I know that we really struggle in collecting epidemiological data, and often that's retrospective when we're looking at incidence and prevalence, and we're to some extent always playing catch up. This may not be a fair question, but I'm just wondering, in the Northwest region, if you have a feel for how many cases you're picking up of familial fibrotic lung disease as a percentage of the patients you see, perhaps, and approximately.
Yeah, that's a really good question, Anne-Mary. I don't know if I have the the correct answer, because but I can tell you more or less from the end of 2019 when we started that clinic. But suddenly, of course, as everybody knows, the pandemic just started. We had, I think, that period where we couldn't perform, I think, the clinic, and we restarted by telephone at that time in October 2020. When I think is, of course, all the face-to-face consultations were forbidden due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Then I think is from last year, we restarted at the end of last year, the face-to-face consultations with our patients, because to be absolutely honest, it's quite a challenge to try things to express everything that we want to the patient through the phone and to the FEMB3 through the phone. We're performing, we did it, but it was a challenge. And of course, the empathy and the interaction between health professionals and the patient, of course, is not the same, especially during the first visit of the familial interstitial pneumonia when it's through the form. But that were the circumstances that we need to work through. So I think it's at that time, I think we started. So I could say that since October 2020, that officially was the first telephone consultations. And then since the last 4 or 5 months, we are performing face-to-face telephone. So I think we have around 60, I think it's patients or familial interstitial pneumonia, and that is only within your cohort.
Yes.
So I think if one specialist centra can have that, I'm absolutely sure. And if we can extend, I think it's that compulsory in the knowledge, and to promote as well the teaching sessions, such as, for example, I think it stands for across genomic education program, health education in England, or training for all NHS staff, or I think it's a national or international IRD and rare disease courses with focus on genetics, things like this. I think that the numbers will increase, because as soon as we create awareness, the health professionals will have the knowledge. It's basically we will know exactly what we are looking for. And maybe the cases were there for a while, but unless we know what we are looking for, it's different to identify them.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you said that you're going to start some work on processing previously collected samples, which of course will have an impact on understanding, I guess, more about the prevalence of familial IPF. And you also spoke to a future where there is a much more cohesive approach with the ILD specialist and the specialist genomics team. And I'm picking up from what you're saying, as we're now coming out of the pandemic years, that's something that is either starting to happen or is within arm's reach of happening for future care of our patients.
Yeah, definitely. Now we need an integrative and multidisciplinary approach. We're well familiarized in IRD about the joint clinics with, for example, the rheumatologists. Now I think we have joint clinic for many aspects, but with the genomic medicine staff, I think it's genetic counselors, clinical genetic consultants, we have some type of relation, a professional relationship in the past, but now we need to integrate. But we need to start our ILD MDTs based on genetics, and that is before and definitely would be after the results. And also that will be, I think, a bi-directional learning curve, because they need to learn more from us in terms of ILD, and we need to learn a lot from them. And what is my feeling, to be absolutely honest, is Every time that you acquire more knowledge and skills, you realize more about your limitations. That is what I am experiencing at the moment. More I learn, more I acquire, more I notice, oh, I think it's just at the beginning, and that is a long way. It's excited, and it's really important, I think, is to be aware of that, because constantly the knowledge is changing, and more, I think, is papers are coming out, as well as national, international projects. But I think is we need to be aware of that, that we need a constant updating, I think, of the knowledge and the skills. And then I think maybe that could be a good opportunity, not only for physicians, definitely we need our specialist nurses, specialist pharmacies, among other health professionals to be involved, and maybe to create a type of centres, specialist centres for familial cases, and to create such a specialist program or something. I think that could be interesting, and it's not, I think, it's in any country at the moment specifically like this. We have problems about ILD, but not about familial interstitial pneumonia. I have that in mind. I have to say, I think we need resources, time, facilities, and now with that big change in April 2022 with that directory, we have a lot of things to do. But that is something that we would like to do. And what I say we is, of course, all the colleagues, I think, is that are involved of that. It's not only myself, of course not. I think it's, and of course we want, I think, as well to start with that program, provide all the knowledge, to integrate with the basis with the patients, to monitor that, participate on the joint IAT MDT with genomic medicine staff. And gradually, I think it's maybe to create the first, I think it's like a program that could be potentially a regional or national program on familial interstitial pneumonia. I don't want to say only familial pulmonary fibrosis, because we're talking about only a certain type of disease. Familial interstitial pneumonia could be a little more broad terminology. That is an idea. And of course, more than welcome to receive, I think it's a suggestions, comments, and working together. Absolutely sure that we can do it, and that could be great.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Thank you, Pilar. And I'm sure that people who are listening to this recording will be contacting you, enthused about the possibilities and how we can improve care for those with familial IPF. I've enjoyed our conversation very much. It's been incredibly insightful. And I thank you for taking the time and for stimulating thoughts and future action so that we do all continue to learn more in this rapidly changing field of interstitial lung disease. Thank you, Pilar.
Thank you for the opportunity. It was, again, as I said, a pleasure to be here. And I think that's just the beginning, and the future looks promising. Thanks again, and we will work together on this.